Thank you. Well, I want to thank you for the opportunity of being here, and I want to also to apologize for my English because it's a terrible English, but I think you will be able to understand. I'm working since 81 in a feminist movement in Brazil, and our main work is to fight against domestic violence. We have there what we call SOS woman, and we try to help women to overcome the situation of violence in the house. But I don't want to talk today about this, the movement itself, but I want to try to understand the relationship between this movement and television, the media in general and television in particular. What is the role of television for our movement? To give you a general idea of the feminist movement in Brazil, I have to say that it's a very new movement. It takes its first steps in 1975 in São Paulo and in Rio. In Minas Gerais, where I live, is another state of Brazil, the movement is still more recent. After the International Women's Years in 1975, a number of small women's groups began to appear throughout Brazil, in every state, Bahia, Pernambuco, Minas Gerais, but particularly strong in São Paulo. Although, in the case of Minas Gerais, this kind of group did not have, at that moment, great influence, neither in the diffusion of new ideas about women's role in society, nor in the creation of women's organization. It will be only in 1981 that the first feminist movement is created in Minas Gerais. It's a very recent movement. The Women's Center's Right Defense, the CDM, the movement where I work with, has been created in response to two murders committed by the husbands against their wives. At that moment, a large number of women spontaneously took the street in protest and decided to create a permanent women's group. The issue I want to discuss to you today, it's about the role of the media in the creation and furthermore in the continuing life of the CDM. In fact, I want to discuss with you two main problems. One, why during the later years of the 70s, didn't the small feminist groups in Minas Gerais reach a larger public, and why didn't they turn into a larger movement? Second, why was the issue of violence the only one able to put together in a few hours 100 women under the same banner? When we consider, of course, that if the women's movement had developed earlier and stronger in São Paulo than in Minas Gerais, it is because of the earlier industrial capitalist growth in São Paulo, which has generated both Brazil's largest concentration of wage workers and Brazil's stronger and better organized popular movements. But these two conditions were not already well established in Minas Gerais when the women's movements spread its new ideas throughout the state. So it's not only these two conditions who make possible the creation of the feminist movement in Minas Gerais. I think, indeed, that the media had here a significant role. Very ambiguous, I agree, but nevertheless crucial. Because of the very nature of the media, and particularly television, the wife's murder were seen as a great sensationalistic event. In the two Mineiros cases, which had been broadcast through the national network, the crimes had been committed by very wealthy husbands of very well-known local families. Those facts, violence, and the disclosing of the upper class intimacy are, as you know, very attractive to broadcast television. Thus, in spite of the fact that family violence is an old issue in all social classes, it has been the media that turned this already existing problem into a social event. TV had created such an ambience of ugly and unusual violence with the reporting details of these murders that women's response had been of almost natural consequence. It was as if every woman could recognize herself and her life in the story reported on the screen. It was the first time that all that private and intimate violence could be recognized as everybody's problem. On the other hand, women's spontaneous response was also a good event to be reported on TV. Nothing more attractive and curious than mothers and wives going out the streets, those women who were made to stay at home. Nothing more exotic than women reacting against the natural law of men's impunity for killing their wives. However, it is interesting to point out that never was our feminist movement considered dangerous or forbidden by the government or other authorities. Whenever we decided to make public manifestations, we always had the police department permission. It hasn't always been the same for some other opposition parties or movements. Why the feminist movement is not considered dangerous? Therefore, because we were considered an interesting event for TV, most of the TV viewers are households, the women's movement in Minas Gerais has been able to reach a wide range of women with its new ideas. Furthermore, we have been able to create a social movement in spite of our few numbers, because we had wide access to the media. The media's capacity to turn into reality everything they print or show on screen, if I can see it, that it exists, it's very impressive. Because we had to exist and we wanted to have an impact on society, we had been obliged, in a certain sense, to create systematically public events which could have an appeal on the media. As a result, we had rapidly found ourselves in the difficult situation of trying to work on events that could interest the media: conference, public debates with politicians, protest parades on the streets, public festivities, press release, etc. Everything frequently scheduled in a way to make the evening news. The positive aspect of this kind of work is obviously that the women's movement has become rapidly a strong presence in every political moment of the state. But I want to stress now the difficulties of that relationship with the media. First of all, there is a gap between the feminist movement language and the TV language. In the case of our struggle against violence, for instance, our position is a result of a new understanding of the traditional family relationship and a criticism of the subordinate woman's role in this relationship. The wife's murder shows for us, in a kind of reverse image, the essential violence that underlines man and woman loving relationship. How can we transmit this analysis in a 2 seconds television close-up? Naturally, TV doesn't want to know our ideas about the family. TV's own message about domestic violence can be summed up in 3 basic ideas. 1, strong passion may end in death. Those who love deeply may kill, is one basic idea. 2, love and death are universal events. In every social class, men and women are the same. So we cannot change men and we cannot change women. 3, some group of women, feminist groups, these women who doesn't know how to love us, are against men. They want their revenge, so they demand harsh sentences. It is very hard for us to challenge or to change these media assumptions in 20 seconds answer. Furthermore, because the kind of question we are supposed to answer on TV, these questions are, at the outset, distorted. In the case of the murders, they kept asking us how many years we wanted the husband to serve in jail. For us, the number of years was not important. We wanted, indeed, to point out the contradictory structure of the modern family, where love is equated with violence and death, and to show the contradictory structure of social values, where killing family members is defended with the principle of family honor. The media only wanted to find out who is the bad guy and who is the good guy, that is, the man who killed, who was, on the other hand, a good worker and a good father, or the woman who was killed, but who was a neglecting mother. And having decided who is right or wrong, they don't ask further. They don't ask why. Another difficulty with this relationship between the media and the feminist movement has to do with our own conception of political organization. We believe that our movement has to organize itself in a very democratic way, without leadership, without hierarchies, without spokespersons. But the media's very nature is just the inverse. To them, there are mainly two kinds of speeches. One which belongs to those who command, those who are in charge of, so who may speak instead of, and another which relates to public opinion, that is, the anonymous voice in the streets. TV's discourse organized itself within this frame. Thus, whenever we had to speak with the media, they always put in their presentation speech, "This is X, the leader or the president of the feminist movement in Minas Gerais." They created, in doing so, a concrete leadership for the viewers. It was very difficult for us to fight against that construction because of our own problems to deal with this kind of situation. First of all, we had to learn very quickly how to deal with the media, how to talk in front of the cameras. For us, for some of us, this was an impossible core. So those who were able to overcome quickest this learning, those who talked from the start, became, for the public, the leaders. More than that, TV began to impose its own styles. They began to choose the woman whose styles of speaking they liked when they wanted us to talk about some issue. This was leading to the creation of a subtle hierarchy within the group. An invisible line began to be drawn, a line which tended to distinguish between intellectual and practical work. It was clear for us that those who were more used to dealing with language, those who outside the movement had more intellectual jobs, like teachers, for instance, had a natural advantage to lead the movement. We had to make a conscious effort to disseminate this knowledge and to help everyone overcome this initial inequality. Finally, still linked with the problem of our eagerness of creating events to reach more public, this necessity imposed by the logical structure of TV, we had the problem of media's influence upon the movement's organizational work. Because we were considered to hold the legitimate woman's opinion, we were asked to give our views about every event going on the city, which was more or less, many times less, related to women's problem. Many times we didn't know anything about the event, and we had to spend some time to learn about what was going on and to discuss our position about it. After a while, it was the media who was deciding for us which were the important subjects to discuss and which were the priorities of our action. They are telling us how, when, and for whom we must do feminist work. It was virtually impossible to say, I don't know anything about this case, or we decided to do nothing about it. We have been living daily under stress, afraid of answering the phone and having to talk with reporters, because, as you can imagine, every day newspapers and TV report cases of murder, rapes, etc. It was impossible for us to give a response to every event and to follow the media agenda. This was damaging to our own priorities. In conclusion, I want to say that clearly it is very impossible today to make politics without the media, particularly TV. The traditional ways to circulate ideas, oral communication, newspaper, etc., are not as powerful as TV, above all in a country like Brazil, where every family has a TV set and where people usually don't read. Besides, to change society, every kind of movement has to control the key spaces where discourse is created. TV is undoubtedly one of these spaces. The problem is that we are not strong enough to control it. TV has its own capitalist logic and structure. So, whether it is important to use TV to spread our ideas, it is also important to be aware that this is a very contradictory relationship, because we are using TV, but TV is using us too. And it is evident that in this relationship, we are the weakest partner.
State Councils for the Arts, that come from National Endowment for the Arts funds, but basically from what's called the Expansion Arts Program, the Minority Art Program. They come from work programs like summer youth employment and various manpower programs, from corporations, from, for example, Citibank and Exxon tend to fund murals, and from foundations. So one of the big jobs of, you know, putting murals on walls is the whole problem of fundraising, and that has all kinds of political and other ramifications.
Is there any kind of funding for, I noticed you said that you mentioned about the deterioration of murals. Is there any kind of funding, do you get any kind of funding for maintenance of your murals once they're painted so that they're not lost?
Well, there has been some fundraising, particularly by City Arts Workshop, which 10 years ago began painting the first murals, many of which are now deteriorating, to fix up the murals. But this is a particularly bad problem because of inflation, and that many of those murals, when they were painted, it cost a certain amount of money to put them up on the wall, and it cost much more money to repair them than it ever cost to put them up on the wall in the first place. So this has been a real conundrum. And one of the great ironies, I just began with 7 other artists. We formed our own mural group, which is called Art Makers. And we're getting our first real heavy taste of trying to raise funds ourselves to finance mural projects for this summer. And one of the great ironies of fundraising is that the New York State Council for the Arts has a category. And the category under which they have two categories three categories basically under which you can apply for funds for murals. One of them is art in public places, and that's for immense city-type projects of $50,000 to $100,000 at a shot that is only given once every 2 years. Well, obviously that doesn't include mural projects, which budgeted about a large mural project might cost $10,000, $12,000 to put up in current figures. And then they have another category called sponsored projects, which is where artists can compete with each other in a kind of a competitive way for any kind of project they want to do now that they've eliminated individual grants from the CAPS program has been cut back. So this is a new way that individual artists can apply for stuff under real competitive kind of thing called sponsored projects. The third category under which murals can be applied for is called temporary installations. And I bit my tongue every time I had to fill out something under that category. Well, I don't know actually of women who are involved in the kind of graffiti that you see on the subway trains, but there has been a lot of development in the last few years in what's called artist graffiti, which involves people, artists of different kinds going out on the streets and doing stencils, for example, for political things, or putting other kinds of, doing billboards. This is a great fun kind of thing to do, which is there's a billboard, for example, that says your country's at war. It says your country, our company's at war fighting for your business, and you go up there and you change it to say your country's at war fighting for murderers in El Salvador, this kind of thing where billboards are being converted. And this kind of graffiti activity involves men and women artists. I myself have been involved in, with a group of other people, in putting up stencils against nuclear disarmament. There was a whole group of brigades around the city, and we had open workshops in which people came and cut out stencils and then went and put them up in the streets. And there are artists involved in doing stencils against gentrification and all kinds of other subjects, and in doing billboard stuff. And that actually began from a feminist basis. The early billboards done out in California and in Connecticut were all attempts to change sexist billboards and convert them into something that changed the message around entirely.
I'd like to ask Paula if the women that are involved in the feminist groups that you know about are making their own media, and if films or videotapes, and if there are places on TV or movie theaters or other ways that they show that media.
No, it's very difficult to do that in Brazil because we have no money to do that.
There isn't some sort of, I thought there was some sort of national funding film program, no?
No, television is a private, it's private, and so it's very difficult. We had, we can go to the media and have a feminist program on TV, but it's not our sponsorship, you know. We have people who make photos and who try to make some records in some events, but it's impossible to have our own media. It's impossible there. You know? We try once to make a theater street group with people who work in theater and drama. It was a very good idea, but it's impossible to continue doing so because we are very few people, and to do that is to change everything and to begin another kind of work, you know. So it's very difficult to have our voice with our own medium. It's a problem. We had to depend on the others.
Deciding, you know, what they believe to be the primary issue in the feminist movement versus what you think, and you probably will not be the same. I mean, the media, I assume, is not choosing what you feel are the most important issues to be presented. So how do you deal with that manipulation? Do you try to manipulate them back to say what you want?
In 20 seconds,
Yes, we try to show. We have a little time to speak on TV. It's only 2 seconds, 20 seconds, 1 minute, you know. And you have to do it very fast, you know. And so the first thing is to change the question of the reporter. They always do the wrong question. And the question is not a good one, and you have to explain with that, and it's finished, you know. But it's a very difficult situation because they force us to be present whenever they want. For instance, it was one day it was the trial of one of those husbands, and we have not enough time to organize ourselves, so we couldn't do nothing. So they go to our center and they film the door, the closed door, and they say the feminist movement is over in Minnesota. So we cannot be silent. We had to be there every single when they want and for what they want. We cannot say no. We don't not want the media. It's a very difficult situation.
If I could comment on that briefly, you could turn some of that around sometimes. I watch soap opera as part of my study of all of this stuff. I won't get into long reasons for it. But several years ago, there was a case on Guiding Light where a woman was prosecuting her husband for rape in a state that had just instituted a new law allowing her to do that, and hers was going to be the first case that was prosecuted. And of course, within the framework of that soap opera, all of the different reasons why she should not do that were brought forward primarily by her friends and her family, who one of the best arguments they felt that they had to bring forward was that you can't do this to your daughter because how can you do this to your daughter? She'll grow up knowing that her daddy went to jail for raping her mother. But clearly the point that this child was supposed to learn was that her daddy did not go to jail for raping her mother. Now, having watched that, and then I was also watching a Stanley Siegel show one day on which the woman who played the role of this woman was on. And I had been casting about in my mind saying, there's got to be some way that we can use this. This is, you know, an extraordinary thing that soap operas, that millions of women watch in this country. And I believe that these issues are coming forward on soap operas, not because intellectuals are suddenly finding the value of soap operas, or that because the soap makers are becoming so progressive. It is because, again, that telepathic communication that exists out there among women, they cannot, soap makers, present programs that are so obsolete that women are not going to watch them. So they have to some extent respond to the thing that is happening out there. So in a certain sense, the oral tradition recreates itself in this technology, through the technology that belongs to everybody, that is the accumulation of all human knowledge, so that the women themselves are like kind of putting that very subtle direction onto what issues are being dealt with on soap operas and how those questions are now being resolved. What used to be resolved with somebody acquiescing to it now is resolved in a different way. I mean, a lot of it's phony, we know that. But in any case, the point about this is that I saw this actress on the Stanley Siegel show, and he ended up his show by saying, oh, isn't it a shame, ladies and gentlemen, this lovely young woman to be raped, as if she had not been a lovely young woman, it would have been perfectly okay. But I suddenly heard this actress say, oh, no, no, Stanley, she said. It was a good thing that she was raped. What, says Stanley, and he comes rolling back with all the cameras. And she said, the reason, not that it's good that anybody is raped, she said, but within this storyline, she said, everywhere I go now, and I go to visit my mother in North Carolina, and I go up to Massachusetts, everywhere I go, she said, women come up to me on the streets and in the supermarkets and say to me, hang in there, we're so glad that you're doing this, and this is incredible, and we're behind you. And she said it's like was a total, absolute total revelation for her because it put her in touch with all of those people out there. And she even said that her mother, her cousin told her that her mother was watching the show one day, and she had a line where she says to the husband who is demanding sex, she says, you know, you have no right to demand that of me. And the mother turns around to the cousin and she says, that's right. you know, after X number of years of, you know, I sort of, so in any case, as I say, that aspect of television can be available to us because I called up CBS and I got to talk to a secretary or receptionist and I explained to her that I thought that there might be some way that we could use this, you know, like in a major way, and she was interested in the idea and she began to mention it to some of the actresses. Well, as it turns out, the head actress called me back, the one who was playing this role, one day, and we got into a very lovely conversation, and she, the first thing that she did was to come down and appear with Betty Friedan, of all people, for a Mother's Day presentation that was being sponsored by Now. But in any case, I mean, Maureen Garrett was her name, and she was willing to do this. But she was even more interested. She came to me and said, is there some way I can visit a woman's prison? Because her character was then going to shoot the guy in self-defense of somebody else, and she was going to go to jail. So she wanted to be able to go into a woman's prison and see what was happening before she got on television with this role. And I knew within my own acquaintance also people who then were going to take her. The whole thing, eventually, Bernadette Powell was in jail at the time. She was just going to be sentenced for shooting her husband in self-defense up in Ithaca. And she's a black woman who got 15 years from an all-white male jury for this. And her case, of course, still continues. She's in jail now. But in any case, I said to Maureen, how would you like to go up to Ithaca for the sentencing of Bernadette Powell, which we did. And she met Bernadette. She went into the jail. Everybody in the jail recognized this woman. They were completely stunned that here was the number one star of the number one soap opera in the country was now in this jail in Ithaca to meet and talk to Bernadette Powell and find out what was happening. And there was an article in the local paper and so forth. Now, this was originally, I mean, these people were going to, and another actress came forward, a black actress, they were going to be working on that case. There were other things that took my attention away from that, and I'm not really sure ever what developed from that, but the point is that things can be developed from that. She was willing to go out and do interviews with Soap Digest about things like this. She was willing to begin to involve herself on that everyday level of, and she was, as I say, a major. So that's just an addition to that television problem.
More questions?
Well, as I was saying, that was my hardest problem, was we were terrific at presenting the realities, which is an art in itself, and which, that's all I can say to Paula, is all you can do is be realer than them in 20 seconds, say some words that they refuse to talk about that are everyday life. But basically, I must tell you that we failed in the 60s. We had great sophistication and much media overwhelming, and we failed to make it clear, you know, if we were saying one thing and they didn't like it, they could always turn to Jerry Rubin, who would say, kill your father. Now, either they would have a real Jerry Rubin and put him on the television in place of us if we were not saying, look, no, we really want to change things so that everybody can have a better life. He'd say, kill your father was the next step of the revolution. Or they would take a feminist movement, which was hard. It was hard for our feminist movement to get these kind of fake people. So they invented the bra burning. Didn't happen. Do you know that? Nobody, there was no bra burned at Atlantic City. Might have been. It was a good idea, but nobody did it. The famous bra burning of, you know, at the American. Well, anyway, the point is they'll either pick other leaders who'll say what they want, or, you know, if you can't come up with a slippery one. So the only answer is to build your own movement independent of it and to keep trying the way you are as cleverly as possible. To say in 20 seconds what has to be said and remind each other that the person you put up there is not necessarily the real leader. It's hard. There's no way around it. It's like, how can I take power without taking power, you know? Mm-hmm. They're powerful. But no, in fact, I just saw that interesting, The Business of America, which is going to be on next week, which also, no, I had a difficulty presenting the answers because I haven't got an answer, and I'm enough of a personal artist, not just a political artist, to be willing to go ahead and show it even if it doesn't look like good. I also, by the way, this is just a purely personal announcement. I'm writing about higher and higher levels of white-collar automation now, up to bank vice presidents who put their calendar into their screens every 15 minutes, and the people yet above them can figure out how their time is spent and so on. So if anybody here is involved in that kind of work, social work or librarian, or anybody who feels that the technology is making these inroads on their work, I wonder if they, you know, sort of talk to me afterwards. I just want to get a sense of where it's all happening. No, I haven't got an answer, and I don't want to put, I never thought of myself as, you know, an art for art's sake person, but I'm art for art's sake enough or personal enough not to want to put a fake answer on the end of my thing. I just can't think that will do any good.
I was really a question to everybody here, and that's last year's conference was about women in technology, and that issue has been coming up a lot in what we've been talking about, and who's controlling specifically the computers and the televisions and mass media technology. And I was wondering if there are any women here who are involved in, besides WBAI people, who are involved in controlling the television cameras and, you know, being the interviewers. And because I was just thinking the whole time that Paula was speaking that in America, you know, in North America, where there's like, it's bigger and there's more money, during this summer at the Center for Women's Peace Camp, we have the same problem with the local media and with the national media. And we just tuned out to them because we had the advantage of having the women's news media there, which documented the whole summer for us. Mm-hmm. And we had media training workshops where everybody like learned how to speak to, you know, but it's a different place and more people. So I was wondering whether there are women here who are working on learning those skills and, you know, developing their own
means of communication that reaches millions and millions of people in this country. I mean, this is a big issue.
Right.
Or should we attempt to control it, and then by what means? I mean, I ask that of all the panelists. You're all communicators. You're in theater. To me, it's a basic key issue right now. Mm-hmm. I have no answer.
I don't think there's any way that you can, you know, you don't, in a sense, you don't even really want to do that. You don't want to incorporate yourself into a structure that sucks everybody's blood anyway. That the whole idea of building your own media or your own art or whatever, I mean, I think was clearly shown today that people can, A, go out and do it with other people, but B, that it's very important that what you present is very important. And if you start out with the idea that you're not presenting ideologies, you're presenting real people who are dealing with real life situations in real life ways. In radio, and WBAI, I mean, I would make an appeal that I think that WBAI is reaching a whole new phase of energy and excitement. The 60s was very exciting, but it had certain limitations to, you know, like the real life situations that people were dealing with. They were primarily dealing with the war. Which, of course, was not the only real-life situation.
Look, you're hitting yourself on the head for something that you can't do. You can't replace a movement. We artists can't sit around and blame ourselves and say, if I were more talented, if my voice were louder and clearer, it would drown out that horrible static on the television. In the 60s, when there was a big movement, I could distribute McBird myself, and nobody told me what to put into it, and it worked terrifically. I cannot distribute 500,000 copies myself right now. Maybe some gay groups can, because they come together and they know each other and they can literally hand them to each other. And we would be kidding ourselves and having no political analysis if we thought we could replace that movement if we were better, if we were clearer. She's got 100 people there. If she had half the city, they could speak clearer and more people would hear them. If the television wouldn't listen, people would turn the television off and come to their meetings. And they probably could get on television, but not rightly, but with a half-assed, the closer version. So we do, have to battle this strategy. I mean, if I get a chance, should I go on there? And if I have 20 seconds, I know I'll sound like a virago, you know. But all right, so should I, shouldn't I? You can answer that question personally each time, but you can't blame yourself if you can't replace a movement. A play is just a play, and a painting's a painting, and it's not a movement. And a movement will give you a platform and make you heard and help you to distribute and have its own forms of organization. And short of that, well, we just struggle along each time making.
But what I just want to add to that, though,
There's no real answer.
The movement doesn't create the work. The work creates the movement.
Well, I don't think so.
No. Well, I would disagree with that altogether.
I'd like to make one.
Okay,
I'd like to make one more comment on that question because I think it's a crucial question for all of us, the question of whether we support an alternative media or whether we try to get our voices heard in the mainstream media. And I think it's really equivalent to the question they keep throwing at women as to whether you want a career or you want to be a mother.
Right.
I think you have to do both, that we definitely have to support our alternative media because we've worked really hard to put them in place and we need them. But to ignore the mainstream media and not to analyze and work with those people within that mainstream media, and there are a lot of them, who are willing to listen to you and to work with you and put on those occasional programs that do represent your point of view and reach all those people you can't possibly reach in the alternative media, not to work with them, not to analyze and do what you can with it, is very foolish. So I really want to congratulate Paula on the work that they've done. I could tell from the presentation it's really terrific. Right.
We didn't know when our movement was getting into.
So any more? Well, we can press you informally. Questions?